From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And we begin today talking about farmers. President Trump last week announced a $12 billion payment package for American farmers. The money is meant to offset losses from high costs, low prices, and the ongoing trade war with China, which has hit soybean growers especially hard. Applications are supposed to open this month, with checks going out next year in February. If this sounds familiar, it should. In 2018, during Trump's first term, the administration announced a nearly identical bailout. Same dollar amount, same rationale. Today we're talking about what's driving this latest round of payments, what farmers are saying, and what the public thinks about government supports for agriculture. A little later, we'll also talk about new research on how food prices are shaping Americans' holiday meals this year. Joining me now is Skylar Rossi, editor at Harvest Public Media. Skylar, welcome to The 21st Show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Also with us is Brenna Ellison, a professor and the undergraduate program coordinator in the Department of Agricultural Economics at Purdue University in Indiana. Brenna, welcome to you as well.
Thanks for having me on.
Listeners, you can join us today at 800-222-9455. Maybe you or someone in your family farms. Are you excited about the possibility of these payments? Or maybe, like just about everybody, you are a consumer of American agricultural products. What do you think about these payments to farmers? And what's motivating them especially? 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. All right, Skylar, can you just remind us what's happening with American soybeans and China this year?
Yeah, definitely. So China is the top buyer of U.S. soybeans typically. And for a while this year, China was not buying any U.S. soybeans. The country was boycotting U.S. soybeans in retaliation for the Trump administration's tariffs. And since then, China has agreed to purchase about 12 million metric tons of U.S. soybeans, but that's less than half of what the country typically purchases. And I was just reading this morning, too, that China has not bought that full amount yet. So as you maybe can imagine, that's left farmers to have to figure out where they're going to sell their soybeans. Some of them are storing them. Some are selling domestically to crushing facilities, but really, none of those options are making up for the loss of not being able to sell to China this year. And it's really one example of how the ongoing trade war is impacting farmers directly.
I've also heard there have been knock-on effects where, you know, corn growers who might have stored their crops until, you know, they could get a better price in the future maybe are finding less storage available because of all the soybean farmers storing their stuff. So let's talk about this payment package. Some are calling it a bailout. What exactly does it consist of beyond the $12 billion headline?
Right. So most of that $12 billion is set for row crop farmers. So these are farmers who are growing things like corn, soybeans, sorghum, cotton. There's a long list of other crops too. So up to $11 billion is for row crop farmers. And then the other $1 billion is set aside for specialty crop growers. So that's farmers growing things that are not row crops. So like fruits and vegetables would be an example. And as you mentioned in the beginning, the USDA says row crop farmers should know by the end of this year how much money they're expected to get. And those checks should be out by the end of February.
And where is this money coming from?
This has been a little bit confusing, actually, because during the announcement, President Donald Trump said that the money's coming from tariff revenue. But lots of national reporters who cover this sort of thing in Washington much more than I do report it's actually coming from a USDA fund. So the money's coming from a USDA fund that is taxpayer dollars.
All right, Brenna Ellison, I want to bring you into the conversation. And you're welcome to comment on anything we've talked about so far. But one of the things that I was most excited about to have you on for is you have collaborated with some economists at the University of Illinois on research into public opinion about these sorts of payments. And so I wonder if you can just begin by describing the survey. Who are you polling and how?
Sure, I'm happy to. So the work that you're referring to is our Gardner Food and Agricultural Policy Survey. This is collaborative work with Maria Kalaitzandanakis and Jonathan Kappas at University of Illinois. And really, we've been conducting this survey for almost 4 years now, and we send out a quarterly survey to U.S. consumers. It's designed to be nationally representative on gender, age, income, and geographic region. And so every quarter, we have a survey of 1,000 U.S. households, and we are asking them some tracked measures about how they feel about different food and ag policies, but then we'll also ask about timely topics. So things like holiday meals, food prices, things like that.
Yeah, and we'll get to the holiday meals later, but what are some of your key findings, particularly with these sorts of payments to farmers we've been talking about?
Yeah, great question. So in general, I do want to say that the public is, there's just a lot of positive feelings towards farmers, right? So the public likes farmers a lot, but we ask specifically which types of payments to farmers they are more or less supportive of. And we give them options like payments to help farmers out in a natural disaster, or payments when crop prices are too low, or for things like trade or export restrictions, make crop insurance more affordable. There's lots of ways that we could potentially get money to farmers. The ones that resonate the most with consumers, or that they're most supportive of, are payments to help in times of a natural disaster, probably because we've all seen how these affect maybe places where we live, or other places where we might have family or friends, or potentially farming relatives. So they're most supportive of natural disaster payments and to make crop insurance more affordable. Things that they have been less supportive in the past are when crop prices are too low, but also having trade or export restrictions.
Yeah, less than 50-50 on those trade and export restrictions, as well as low crop prices, right? Whereas it's like 80% support, I think, for natural disasters. Roughly.
Correct. So natural disasters hovers up at 80%, and it's definitely the strongest support by far. Whereas when crop prices are too low, or we have trade or export restrictions, those are hovering in the 50% of people support that. I have checked our latest data because we've tracked three more quarters since the paper that we're talking about today. Trade and export restrictions is still next to the bottom, but I would say support in general has upticked a little bit. So it's now hovering around 60%. So I think, you know, probably the saliency of what we're seeing is affecting that some from a public perspective.
Right. Because it is an active national topic right now. Maybe it gets swept up with all the other political disagreements, and people kind of go to their corners to some extent. I don't know. Maybe not. Let me take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st show, and we are talking about the payments, $12 billion in payments for farmers who have been struggling this year, especially soybean farmers. What with the trade war, retaliation from China, where they have not buying nearly as many soybeans as they have in the past, plus generally low prices for what farmers are pulling out of the ground, and high input costs for things like fertilizer and maintenance on their equipment and that sort of thing. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number, 800-222-9455. We're talking about this with Brenna Ellison, who is a professor in agricultural economics at Purdue University, and Skylar Rossi, an editor at Harvest Public Media. All right, Skylar, we talked there sort of about broad American public opinion. I know you and one of your colleagues, you routinely talk to farmers for your work with Harvest Public Media, but specifically about this. So what have you heard from farmers about these payments?
Yes. Yeah. My colleague Frank Morris spoke with a farmer right around when this announcement happened last week. Richard Oswald, who's a grower in Missouri, grows corn and soybeans. And he's saying these payments will help farmers maybe pay off some bills or pay off a loan, but it's not enough to make up for losses that many farmers face this year. And we're hearing sort of a similar take from other farmers and farm groups. That this is more of a temporary solution than a long-term fix. And this is definitely something that we're going to keep reporting on and asking farmers about, especially as they learn how much they're going to get from these payments and as we learn who gets these payments as it starts to roll out the next few months.
Yeah, maybe you can talk in a little more detail about some of the, you know, I mentioned the high, we hear this phrase, high input costs, low prices. Can you get a little more expansive than I was just there in talking about some of the other problems farmers are dealing with beyond the, you know, lack of market for their soybeans?
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, high input costs. So things like fertilizer, equipment, basically these expenses that farmers need to get their plants in the ground have been really expensive this year, and also in previous years, it's been really pricey. And then at the same time, lots of crop prices were low this year. So that's cut into revenues for many farmers. They're basically paying a lot more to farm and then not getting as much revenue at the end of the season. So that's made it extremely difficult on top of all of these market disruptions that we've seen with the ongoing trade war that we talked about earlier.
And then farmers need a lot of money kind of up front, right, to get the stuff they need to plant for next year. And they're also making decisions, I guess, now about what they're going to do.
Right, exactly. Do you buy, maybe pull back on the fertilizer that you're going to buy this year because it's so expensive, and kind of making those decisions with all of this information that you have now for months ahead of time.
All right, let's go to the phones at 800-222-9455. Nancy is calling in from Northern Illinois. Nancy, thanks for calling.
Hello, how are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
Fine. I wanted to find out when do the farmers in Illinois expect their first payment?
That's a good question. Skylar, I don't know if you can speak to that. I heard, maybe February next year. I don't know if we have any more information at this time.
Yeah, that's the information we have. The USDA's check should be out by the end of February, so the next 2 months.
Yeah, I did see where the Ag Secretary, I guess, was quoted saying that the application process is going to go through this month, so people will be able to hopefully get some information at least as to whether they're accepted into the program, that kind of thing. Yeah, Brenna, I don't know if you have anything to add on that, or we can get back to the sort of public opinion on this.
Nothing to add on that
Yeah.
question. I think you all covered it well.
Yeah, great. All right. Well, so let me ask you then, because sort of getting back to that public opinion research, you and your collaborators have also assessed not just the sort of overall popularity of these payments and why they're being sent out, but four different types of commodities. And I wonder if you can talk about what you found there.
Sure. So in this one, we ask consumers to do a little bit of math for us, and we tell them if you hypothetically had $100 to distribute across different commodities, like how would you divide up that support? So it could be field crops, livestock, dairy, specialty crops, textile crops like cotton, as well as sugar crops. And so what we find is, again, consumers are a bit more, they want things to feel a bit more equal or fair. So we see a much more even distribution than probably what's happening in practice with farm payments. But we see field crops and specialty crops typically are at the top, as well as livestock. Dairy falls a few dollars behind in the distribution. And then you have textile and sugar crops a little bit lower. So those top three are roughly around $20 a piece. Dairy drops to $17, and then textile and sugar are in the $10 to $11 range each.
Some of these subsidies have gotten attention, or maybe renewed attention, from the people aligned with RFK Jr. and the Make America Healthy Again movement, especially sugar. I wonder if you can just talk a little bit more about that aspect of this.
Yeah, absolutely. So we certainly would expect the MAHA movement to affect some groups of commodities a little bit differently. So sugar crops being one, we know they're really targeting healthier eating. So you might expect maybe fewer dollars to be allocated among people who are positive about the MAHA movement to sugar in particular. You might also see more dollars going to specialty crops since they're, again, promoting more whole foods and things like that. We really don't we divide up our data into people who are positive about MAHA, negative, or maybe unaware. We really don't see those patterns emerge among the public, at least in the survey results that we report. But I think that is something to watch, because again, like, that movement certainly is shaping what's happening in food quite a bit right now. So we didn't see big differences based on that, but certainly you would expect that could impact how payments are going out in the future.
Brenna, last thing I want to ask you about. I saw online where someone had compared nearly identical headlines from the Politico website. In 2018, Trump to offer farmers $12 billion in trade aid. And then last week, 7 years later, White House announces $12 billion farmer bailout package. Can you just speak to, I mean, the sort of deja vu aspect of this, you know, and how what's happening now compares to the first Trump administration?
Sure. Yeah. So when I read the articles that you sent me to prep, I was like, oh, these are mostly identical. So yeah, it is really interesting, and it does feel like a bit of deja vu. And certainly at the time, it was noting that farmers really saw this as a temporary solution and hoped for, you know, longer term trade agreements. And I think the answer is still the same. And so I don't know. Hopefully it's an opportunity to get some resolution for farmers. But I also thought it was really interesting to see those two articles together.
Fascinating. We used to be the soybean producer of the world, but not so much anymore. All right. Brenna Ellison, I'm going to ask you to please stick around. We're going to talk about some of your other research into food prices. But Skylar Rossi, editor at Harvest Public Media, I'm going to let you go. Thanks so much for being with us and sharing your reporting with us here on the 21st Show.
For having me.
More to come after a break. You can still join us, especially we'd love to hear about your holiday food shopping plans. Let us know, 800-222-9455. This is The 21st Show.
Support for The 21st Show comes from the Des Moines Art Center, located in Iowa's capital city, featuring works by regional, national, and international artists of the 20th and 21st centuries. Details are at DesMoinesArtCenter.org.
It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We've been talking about the Trump administration's $12 billion payment package announced for farmers, the latest agricultural band-aid tied to trade disputes with China. We're going to turn now to the sticker shock some people are feeling at grocery stores or when they go out to eat. Still with us is Brenna Ellison, a professor of agricultural economics at Purdue University. You can join us today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Want to know how food prices are affecting your holiday plans this year? Are you shopping differently or maybe serving different foods or cutting back in other ways? 800-222-9455 is the number. All right, Brenna, you recently had a paper, again, with your U of I colleagues, or collaborators, I should say, that sought to answer how people say food prices will affect their 2025 holiday meals. I guess my first question is, what's for dinner?
Yeah, well, good question. So we did this survey in early November, so we had the opportunity to ask people about all the winter holidays, if you will. And so at Thanksgiving, no surprise, 86% of people, so they plan to serve turkey at Thanksgiving. They could obviously serve more than one type of meat. So we also saw 30% of people indicating they would serve pork at Thanksgiving, which probably comes in the form of ham, and another 24% indicating beef.
Can I stop you on that? Because I had to check my assumptions when I saw how many people say they serve pork and beef at Thanksgiving, which is just not something that's in my experience. I don't know anyone who does that. I wonder how that landed with you.
My husband actually made prime rib for Thanksgiving.
Oh, there you go.
It made sense. We actually had ham and so we had pork and beef at my house. So, I don't know. I think the 86% with turkey definitely tracks. And I definitely grew up in a house where we had more than turkey to accommodate multiple types of preferences. So I guess I wasn't too thrown off by that, but I can certainly see where that might happen.
I guess I'm just basic. Okay, well, maybe you can, I derailed you. You were about to say how the meal plans might change for Christmas in terms of the main source of protein at these meals.
Yeah, so we do see a shift in Christmas. So it's a little bit more split across multiple types. So, you know, where pork was only 30% of people at Thanksgiving, it jumps up to almost 48% of people plan to have pork, probably ham at Christmas. We also see beef go up to almost 40% of people at Christmas relative to 24% at Thanksgiving. And then there's still a lot of people eating turkey at Christmas, though not nearly at the same extent as Thanksgiving. So at Christmas, again, we see 48% of people saying they plan to eat turkey relative to, again, that big 86% number at Thanksgiving.
So what did people say about how food prices might affect their holiday meals?
Yeah, so we found a whopping 69% of people said they expect food prices to affect their meal plans. So again, we've asked these sorts of questions in previous years, and the number keeps going up, right? So that we're really feeling the squeeze on prices in terms of how many people say it. We asked people about a lot of different coping strategies that they might do to kind of deal with the food prices. The most common ones are, you know, they're going to try to shop for more deals on their ingredients for their meals and also try to shop ahead of time to spread out the cost over more trips to the grocery store. You'll also see some people maybe reducing the number of food served or reducing the amount of food served or maybe making some changes in the types of food served. But more often than not, they're going to try to shop for deals first and probably not trying to compromise their meals if they can avoid it.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, you do hear so many complaints. And look, I feel this myself buying, you know, meat when I'm out shopping or one of my favorite restaurants that I go to. The burgers are now $18 at this place. And yet it doesn't necessarily seem like most people, the majority of people at least, are not yet sort of like really cutting back on their consumption despite these ever-increasing prices.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's hard. I think people are making changes. I think some of the things we see people reporting more of is maybe they're cutting back on going out to eat, but it is hard to cut back on eating at home, right? We have to eat somewhere. And so I do think we are seeing more people say they might not eat out as often. That maybe is one of the trades they're making, or maybe they're trading other things like maybe, you know, you're not going out to the movies as often or like other forms of, you know, entertainment. But it is hard to give up food, right? That's something we have to have. So I think, you know, trading down to cheaper restaurants or trying to eat more at home, like we're definitely seeing a lot more of that.
Yeah. And I was struck in your survey that 1 in 5 people, and I guess was this taken during the government shutdown or when there was still uncertainty about the food banks and or I shouldn't say food, but like, you know, government food assistance, I should say. Yeah.
Yeah. So this was early to mid November. So, yeah, we were just getting around to getting some of that resolved. So certainly I think people had that in mind when they were answering these questions.
Yeah. 1 in 5 people said they would use food banks or just cut down on the number of guests. So I guess Uncle Owen is maybe not going to be invited to Christmas dinner this year or he's certainly going to have to bring his own dish if he comes. Going potluck,
right.
Yeah.
And we definitely.
No,
we also
go ahead.
Looked at people who said they get, you know, food assistance, and you know they really are going to lean heavily on food banks. And I think all of us probably, depending on which community you live in, there's been so much more attention to like how can you help your local food bank, and so certainly the people that are already trying to get assistance from the government are relying even more heavily than normal on food banks, and so. We also saw the percentage of people planning to visit a food bank was also a lot higher than previous years.
You know, I was so struck by the figures in this study, and you know they're higher. The people who say that the economy is going to affect their meal plans, they are higher than during the 2 years when we had peak inflation of the COVID pandemic, the 2 years at least when this survey was in the field. I wonder what other evidence, as an agricultural economist, what other evidence of this stress, this economic stress, are you seeing out there?
Well, I think, you know, broadly, some of the things we have seen, again, is like sometimes people just cut back on spending. So we had been asking questions, you know, related to tariffs for the past several times. And we had asked people, you know, are there any ways you're adapting to plan for that? And so, you know, we had been seeing people saying, we're going to put off a large purchase or, you know, I think that's the big one. So delaying big purchases is a big signal that we see in the economy when things are slowing down. So that doesn't hit food as often, but maybe, you know, that I feel like every household, right? It's always the dryer that's breaking or something, but that's something you're just going to put off, right? Like that's just something you're going to have to deal with. But that's one of the big indicators is when people feel like they need to put off purchases. That's an indicator that things are definitely slowing down.
I want to share another message, an email we got from a listener. This is going back to the first topic on the payments for farmers. Alita writes in and says, I'm wondering what percentage of the bailouts will go to family farmers versus industrial farms. And then she adds sort of an editorial opinion here. It's unfortunate many farmers voted for the president who destroyed the foreign markets that they worked so hard to cultivate over the years. She says no one likes having to put on the dole, in quotes, bailed out by taxpayers. Brenna, I'll leave it to you to decide whether you want to respond to that last part, but can you speak to this idea of like industrial farming operations versus smaller family farms?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting topic, and I don't have all the stats with me, but we've asked lots of questions about this. Based on the way the USDA defines family farm, actually, I think 97% of farms are considered family farms. They're not all small, right? There are some very large ones. But I think that is something often that the public has like misperceptions about. You have these like commercial farms, but even a lot of families have what are considered more commercial farms. Like they might incorporate them to basically try to protect themselves from a financial standpoint, right? Like they might incorporate their business to formalize it from a structural standpoint and try to protect them in the event that they do have a bankruptcy or something that's trying to protect them as individuals. But USDA data shows about 97% are family farms. And in terms of how payments go out, that is also a really interesting question. Typically, I believe that payments go out in terms of like how much farms are contributing to production. So I will say that, you know, a big share of those family farms are those small ones, and they don't contribute to the total amount of food produced nearly as much as maybe like a much smaller percentage of that top share of the very large farms. So it is a question of, do we want payments to go out based on the size of the farm or based on like the amount of food that a farm contributes to overall production, if that makes sense?
It does indeed. Well, I have really enjoyed talking with you. I enjoyed reading this survey research, which was new to me. I'm kind of a public opinion nerd, so it was fascinating. Thanks so much for sharing your work with us today, Brenna Ellison of Purdue University. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.